Good morning to you. I'm Veronica Rickert, sitting in today for Kathleen Dunn here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. There is certainly plenty to love about the snowy season in Wisconsin, but sometimes even the most stoic of us winds up getting a little bit blue during the winter months. Sometimes, though, it does go beyond that and we get lethargic. We don't have energy to do the things we normally do. We feel like sitting inside, maybe just laying in bed and pulling the covers up over our heads. In fact, if hibernation were an option, there's a good chance that somebody with seasonal affective disorder might try it. And that's where our guest today comes in. He's an expert in seasonal affective disorder. He'll be telling us today what's new in treating SAD, or seasonal affective disorder, how to tell if you have it, and what you can do about it. Join the conversation this hour and tell us how you cope with seasonal affective disorder, what you've tried, what's worked for you, and maybe you're wondering if you have it. Our guest this hour should be able to help you out. So call us at 1-800-642-1234. Our guest this hour is Norman E. Rosenthal. He's a clinical professor of psychiatry at Georgetown University, a therapist in private practice, and the author of several books, including Winter Blues, Everything You Need to Know to Beat Seasonal Affective Disorder. Norman Rosenthal, thanks so much for joining us today.
Great to be here.
I have to ask you, where are we calling you? What state?
I am in just outside of Washington, D.C. in Maryland.
So you've got the dwindling light hours, too. I had to check and see if you were in sunny Florida or something.
Oh, no.
Like that. So you're
I'm
going through it.
Suffering along with the rest of you.
That's good. Misery loves company. So can you tell us about seasonal affective disorder? What exactly is it for people who might not know yet?
Well, you know, I think everybody has known for a long time that people get a little under the weather when it's dark and cloudy and so on and so forth. I think what really was new with the whole seasonal affective disorder story is that some people have it to a much greater degree. When the days get short and dark, you know, instead of feeling a little bit under the weather, they just can't get out of bed. They oversleep. They move slowly. Their concentration flags. They have a difficult time processing information, socializing, getting stuff done. And this can be very depressing when you're supposed to be up and working and so on and so forth. And they can get quite depressed. As one of my first patients said, I should have been a bear because bears are allowed to hibernate, but humans are not.
I think I had that thought just a couple of days ago, how pleasant it would be to hibernate, but not an option, certainly when we have modern snow removal techniques and all of that. So what is the difference between someone who has a normal case of maybe just the blues and seasonal affective disorder?
It's all a matter of degree, really. I mean, it's like, what's the difference between being overweight and being obese? It's a matter of degree, and the more you have it, the more disabling it is. So, for example, people with seasonal affective disorder truly have got an illness that requires some kind of intervention, otherwise they're going to lose their ability to function. Whereas just having the winter blues, it may make you a little less productive, a little less creative, but it's not going to snowball you.
Now, you've had seasonal affective disorder, correct? Isn't that how you
started
on this whole trail?
It actually is. It was, to me, a bit of a voyage of discovery. I came from South Africa, where the weather was lovely, and I came to New York City in the summertime, and the days were long, and I was full of energy and enthusiasm and vitality as I've never felt before, until the fall came. Suddenly, with daylight savings time, the sudden truncation of the daylight hours certainly just hit me unawares, and I found myself slowing down. I mean, I was able to complete my residency quite well, but I knew very, very clearly that I felt different in the winter than I did in the summer. And then after I was done with my residency, I came to do my research fellowship here at the NIH, and at that time, our group was working on biological rhythms and the effects of light and circadian rhythms, and all of it came together as we encountered a few patients with serious cases of seasonal affective disorder, and I collected a group together, and that was when we first described the syndrome and so on and so forth.
Are you familiar with a recent article in the New York Times? It's called Getting a Grip on the Winter Blues. It talks about some new therapies.
Yes, I think, in fact, I was.
You were quoted in the article.
I was quoted in the article,
right.
So I'm familiar with it. Yes, indeed.
Well, one of the things that intrigued me was the idea that seasonal affective disorder might be a version of jet lag.
Well, I think that's a little bit of a stretch, really. I think that some say that in seasonal affective disorders, the rhythms are out of whack. But more than that, I think somehow what's really happening is that the brain is signaling to the person that it's time to shut down. That once upon a time in our evolution, you know, when winter comes, there's very little food around, and there may be a great advantage to conserving energy, to slowing down and eating more and storing body fat. And you could imagine how, you know, thousands of years ago, this might have helped people survive the long winters in the north, and how that gene might have been conserved in order to, you know, further the survival of the species. But nowadays, of course, the gene is nothing other than a nuisance because you're expected to function all year round at high levels. Food is available all year round, so it's no longer of any adaptive advantage. But somehow, in the brain of the seasonal affective disorder person, they still respond to shutdown mode. And the response is to the dwindling of the light. And that's why, and we'll get to this, I know, giving more light is one of the ways to override this response. However, it is intriguing to wonder about what the biological underpinnings are in people with seasonal affective disorder that make them so uniquely susceptible to this seasonal change.
It makes me wonder whether people who grew up in areas where there was less light, say in the far north, maybe, you know, Canadians or the Inuit people, do they suffer from SAD?
Well, it's an interesting question. Certainly some people, some races are more protected than others. And the Inuits may be more protected. I know that the Icelanders have less seasonal affective disorder than other folks, maybe because in Iceland, if you had seasonal affective disorder, you either got out of there or you were in serious trouble. But the Japanese, for example, and the Chinese seem to have much less of it. So there is a racial difference based on probably the climate in which these folks have evolved. But I don't really know whether it has anything to do with where you were born. One thing I've noticed is, say you were born in Florida, you might never have had it. Like myself, when I was born in South Africa, I never had the problem until I was 25, until I came to the United States. So I think the move north may reveal a problem that had always been there, but that had never expressed itself.
That makes sense. Well, another one of the therapies we mentioned just in passing, getting more light, and I know that many people are familiar with a light box, sitting in front of a light box therapy. There's a new one, it seems, judging by this article, a negative ion generator. Can you tell us about that?
That is such an interesting story. Negative ions, and I should tell you that it's I-O-N-S. Because a recent reporter was interviewing me and was wondering how iron could be floating through the air. I-R-O-N.
Oh, right.
So just for your audience, it's ions, I-O-N-S, charged particles. Now, this is a really intriguing story that what's been recognized for years is that certain hot winds create a lot of distress in people. The Santa Ana in California is the most familiar of these, the Chinook in the Rockies. And these winds are known to carry these positive ions, charged particles in a positive direction. Now, you know, normally we think of positive as good and negative as bad, but this is apparently in the reverse. This is a positive energy charge. And Raymond Chandler famously wrote of the Santa Ana winds that it causes housewives to test the edges of their kitchen knives while looking at the backs of their husbands' necks. So it's a distress, it's an ill wind. And on the other hand, negative ions normally occur around waterfalls or when you walk on the beach and the surf is pounding. It's the water creates these negative ions. In other words, places where one normally feels wonderful. And so they have created these little machines. They're not new, they're old. They're like little white noise generators, and you can't see or feel these ions. But it turns out they were originally used as a placebo control for the light therapy. But what was found was when the ion generator gave off a very large density of these ions, that they did indeed have a positive effect on mood in seasonal affective disorder. So they definitely are now to be considered as a part of the treatment arsenal against the condition.
That's so fascinating. You know, it sounds sort of sci-fi, blasting yourself with something you can't even see.
Exactly.
And I read that they sell for something like $165. So, I mean, they're not prohibitively expensive. They're a little bit expensive, but I think the light boxes cost about that much as well.
Yes, they're more or less the same cost.
And can you just blast these at yourself while you're sleeping?
Well, you know, you could. I think that that's not how it's been done, but I think, you know, one would have to have a way of turning it on. And in the studies that have been done, the best kind of studies, what they have used is they've used like a bracelet around the wrist that connects the person to the ion generator to direct the ions along the cord into the body. Otherwise, the ions tend to jump off to every charged particle all over the place.
Interesting. So I wonder if, as this catches on, people would prefer that because it seems as though maybe it could take less of your time than sitting in front of a box.
Maybe, but, you know, one possibility, of course, is to do them both at the same time, and that has never really been formally tested.
Supersize your light therapy.
There you go.
Your sad therapy.
That's great.
Have you tried the ion generator?
You know, honestly, I haven't, and it's purely out of laziness. but I have one somewhere in the basement, and I need to get it out and dust it off while the darkness is still here so that I can actually experience it myself. I'm a great believer in doctors trying their own treatments wherever possible. You know, I'm not suggesting that all doctors go rush out and take all the medicines they dispense, but where possible, it's good to have personal experience.
Well, what do you suggest for someone who has perhaps a mild to moderate case? What is a first couple of steps someone like that could take?
Well, I think the first and easiest thing is something called a Dawn Simulator. What this simply is it's an electronic gadget that plugs into your bedside lamp and turns the bedside lamp on gradually in the morning to simulate a summer dawn. And, you know, it's a couple of $100 or $150, and if you don't want to spend that money, then go out to the drugstore and get a $10 timer that'll simply turn it on. It's not as gentle as the dawn simulator that turns it on gradually, like a dawn gradually getting brighter. You'll suddenly get a bright light coming on, but you get used to that.
That sounds kind of lovely, a nice slow dawn in winter.
It's lovely. I don't leave home without it, and I recommend it. And that sort of gets the day going, and it begins, remember, you're beginning to trick the brain into thinking that this is a summer day. And then from there, in my own bedroom, a light box then comes on, bathes me in light, and I just kind of lie there. You know, it's very passive. It's, you don't have to really strain yourself. And so that's the next thing. I mean, this is if one can. I mean, but most people can. And I call that my Miami beach therapy, because it's like you're lying on the beach. And so you're already getting a lot of treatment without even having to break a sweat.
That sounds pretty nice. Some of these therapies sound pretty pleasant.
Yeah, and then you go from there. I have a light box, for example, at my breakfast table. I'm a great believer in exercise. Of course, we should all be doing exercise anyway, but its side benefit is that it does help with the winter blues. And, you know, on dark days, you know, one may need to have a great deal of light.
So you do this as a matter of course every winter then?
Yes, it's sort of become so second nature, really, that it's a seamless process. But I tell you, on a really dark day, actually, I do have to stay aware of it. Otherwise, and you know, these last days here have been very dark and gloomy. I've been very mindful of having to really keep at it. And the other thing that's interesting is that even with all these techniques, I've been working on a piece, I've been writing a piece, and the words just don't come as quickly. I remember reading in one of William Styron's book that the syrup was there, but it wouldn't pour. And that's how it feels. The words just don't come as readily, you know, in the winter time. So there's definitely a very interesting and subtle change going on, even when you've corrected the worst aspects of the problem.
Well, I guess it makes sense that we could be stiffened up just like the maple syrup in winter.
Yes, that's sometimes how it feels. My patients often say I move like molasses.
Well, we're talking with Norman Rosenthal. We'll be back to take your calls in just a moment. Norman Rosenthal is the author of Winter Blues, Everything You Need to Know to Beat Seasonal Affective Disorder. I hope you'll join in our conversation this hour, share your stories, what has worked for you, and maybe you'd like to figure out whether you have seasonal affective disorder. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. We are broadcasting from Madison today instead of Milwaukee, so please note that changed phone number. Looking forward to hearing from you here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up at 11 o'clock, Larry Mueller and his guests talk about antique Christmas ornaments and other antiques. His guest is Madison antique appraiser and auctioneer Shirley Bauman. That's Larry Mueller at 11 o'clock on Wisconsin Public Radio. Veronica Rickard back with you. We're talking about SAD, or seasonal affective disorder, this hour, what it is and what you can do to treat it. We're heading into we've passed the darkest part of the Wisconsin winter. I guess it just doesn't seem like it because there are so many more months to go. But if you suffer from SAD, call us and tell us your story. How did you beat seasonal affective disorder? What works for you? And maybe you can get some tips as well. Norman Rosenthal, we're going to go to the phones now and take a call from Diane in Milwaukee. Hi, Diane, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Negative ionizers were in vogue about 50 years ago, and then they sort of fell out of favor, I think, because they were hard to, as I remember looking around for them, I couldn't find any because that was before the Internet. And so I see everything that was old is new again.
Yes, there's nothing new under the sun. And as I was researching things, I saw that the original Dawn simulator was created by a man named Houdin, H-O-U-D-I-N. He was the man from whom Houdini took his name. He was in the early 19th century, and he created an alarm clock that had a lit candle, come up at the same time as the alarm clock went on. So you got your light and your alarm coming on at the same time. So there is nothing new under the sun. You're quite right.
So were negative ion generators used to treat seasonal affective disorder when they first appeared, or were they used in some other way?
No, it was just some sense that they would be useful. But I think that there was really no good systematic work done. So there were a lot of suspicions that they might do this or that. But, you know, you can have something out on the market, but unless it's tested very systematically, it won't really gain traction. And so the Termans at Columbia, New York City, were the first people to really systematically look at the ion generator. The interesting thing about the ion generator is you can calibrate it so that it puts out a lot of ions or not a lot of ions. And so you can have a very wonderful control from an experimental point of view. But from the consumer's point of view, you really need to be careful to get the right kind of ion generator, because the wrong kind will not have the same beneficial effects.
What is the right kind?
Well, the best way to get that, I think, is to go to Dr. Terman. He has got a website at www.cetcharlieechotango.org. It's a nonprofit website that will sell you the right kind of ion generator.
Interesting stuff. Let's go to Julie in Madison. Welcome, Julie. You're on the air.
Hi. I'm very much enjoying this conversation, just to know that I'm not alone in my mild winter blues. But I do have a question. I seem to be not quite so blue this year, and I was wondering, we've just had a tremendous amount of snow, if the reflective property of the snow has anything to do with sort of, I don't know, making a person feel a little bit better.
Definitely. Many, many people report feeling better after the snow falls, and it makes sense because the snow reflects a huge amount of light and makes a very real difference. And in fact, sometimes the worst seasonal affective disorder doesn't occur the furthest north, because it occurs more where there's no snow. You know, around the Great Lakes, sometimes it's a little warmer and there's no snow, but it's very dark and dreary. So Wisconsin actually may be a little better from that point of view.
Oh, that's interesting. It does seem as though those flashes of light in your eyes, well, they do wake you up at least.
Yes, indeed. And there's a lot of light that comes off of snow.
Thanks so much for the call, Julie. In the article, the New York Times article in which you were quoted, Getting a Grip on the Winter Blues, they mentioned that psychotherapy is still a pretty effective option for dealing with seasonal affective disorder.
Well, let's put it this way. I wouldn't rely on psychotherapy alone. However, some recent studies have shown that helping people get up and go is very useful. Just the kind of thing I've been telling you. For example, the natural tendency may be to want to sleep in the morning, and you might feel, oh, there's no way I can possibly get up. And in fact, that's not correct. That is an incorrect statement. You can get up, the light will help you, and you will feel better. So to do something that goes against your natural inclination can be very helpful, and sometimes psychotherapy can help you to do that. You may feel, oh, there's nothing I feel like doing. Psychotherapy will help you make sure that you have a, quote, date of some kind or another, something pleasurable that you can look forward to, that you make yourself do, and then you go there, and guess what? It's actually much more fun than you thought it would be. And so psychotherapy can help to galvanize you and motivate you and turn the thing around. So I think all these things really should be used together. I wouldn't say use psychotherapy instead of light therapy.
It is interesting to think that psychotherapy would be effective in a way, because essentially what we've been talking about is how seasonal affective disorder is a product of physiology or genetics, and you would think that it would be sort of more outside things that would help instead of working on it as a sort of mental illness.
Well, you know, you might say that, but, you know, obesity might be genetic. Does that mean you shouldn't go to a nutritional counselor? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Even though you've got a genetic tendency, there are behavioral things you can do to override that tendency. And like, for example, just what we're doing now, you know, putting out information, encouraging people to do various things, that's nothing other than what goes on in psychotherapy, except in psychotherapy, it's customized to the individual situation.
Okay, another phone call now from Mary in Taylor County. Hi, Mary, go ahead.
Good morning. I'm just wondering if your guest has had any experience with individuals who have exactly the opposite experience with the shorter days and longer nights. I actually, since I was a very little girl, have loved and thrived on this time of year, beginning in late fall when things get very brown and gray and dark. It's my favorite time of year. I also function the best this time of year. I get deeply excited about life. Things seem more possible. I get a very positive outlook, and have always had a reaction to about May through probably mid-August of of some of the things you're talking about that happen to people in the winter. I feel like the blazing sun is way too demanding and kind of washes over and blands out a lot of what's immediately around me in life, as opposed to in the dark days of winter. Now there's such contrast where even I love to just see somebody, encounter somebody outside who has a very colorful sweater on, and it's just a glorious sight with the background of nature, you know, being more of a backdrop. And that's probably the best way I can explain it. But I'm just curious, and this feeling runs so deep in me, I've wondered at times over the years if there isn't a physiological, you know, aspect to it.
That's really interesting, Mary. Thanks for sharing that with us. I thought you described it very well, actually. What do you think, Norman Rosenthal?
Well, I think that's an actually beautiful description of the opposite pattern. It's been very well described. In fact, my colleague and I described a summer version of the winter problem. And it just sort of shows how diverse we are, how differently we're programmed one from the other. But I definitely have encountered people who firstly love the winter and secondly people who hate the summer. Just as you're saying, the blazing sun, one of my patients says the sun cuts through me like a knife. And, you know, the summer depression can get very severe. And in fact, it often tends to be, and I'm not saying this is your case, but I'm saying some people's case, it tends to be a sort of agitated depression rather than a winter depression that tends to be a sluggish depression. And an agitated depression turns out to be very dangerous because if people are feeling terrible but they're very activated, those folks may be at greater risk for suicide. So it's a it can be a serious problem. It needs to be very carefully anticipated. In some people, of course, it's just a minor thing, like the winter blues are for those with a minor winter affliction. But for others, it can be rather bad, and if you catch it early in the spring, you're best off because it's like catching the wave just at the right point.
It's interesting. I had just heard of this Mary sort of situation recently where it was an article in the LA Times, which makes good sense. It was, I think, a woman who had moved from Minnesota to Los Angeles and couldn't cope with the sun there and had pretty much identical symptoms
Yes, indeed.
Los Angeles.
A really good thing for everybody to be aware of.
Let's go back to the phones, and here's a call from Rick in Green Bay. Hi, Rick.
Hello. Yes, you mentioned suicide. I had a brother that, with some extenuating circumstances, actually did commit suicide in January, one January years ago. Mm-hmm. And I definitely have seasonal affective disorder, but what I'd like to tell folks is what I've found works for me is Prozac. I've tried different medications. I take Prozac beginning in October, and about March I stop, and it works just fine, just wonderful.
So you just take it over the winter months, then?
Just take it over the winter months, and then I find it doesn't affect me at all.
Hmm. Well, I'm really delighted to hear somebody bring up medications because they are definitely an option. And Prozac, of course, is the first of that whole family of serotonin reuptake inhibitors. And is still an excellent drug, and it's generic, so it's obviously, as not many of them now are, but I think that medication should definitely be considered as an option, and I'm glad you bring them up. And they can also be used in conjunction with light therapy and the other things that we've been talking about. But it's a nice story of somebody who was able to just manage with one thing alone. I think that's terrific.
Thanks a lot for that call, Rick, and medications are an option. What about children as we talk about this? Do children suffer just as adults do from SAD?
Yes, indeed. We have described children and adolescents with a problem. They have some of the same symptoms, but in children, there's some interesting features. The one is that they are often not noticed in the classroom because they're not as disruptive as children say, with behavioral disorders or attention deficit disorders. And so children definitely can suffer. They're often irritable rather than clearly depressed, and they rarely are aware that it's coming from inside. Instead, they tend to blame other people. They think the teacher is being unfair, is being too harsh, etc. So definitely it's an area that needs to be of concern. We did a survey of middle and high school children here in Montgomery County, Maryland, and estimated by the time they get to their senior year, 5% of these children, 1 in 20, have seasonal affective disorder, almost at the adult level, and certainly they're not getting diagnosed nearly to the extent that they should.
So what should parents be looking out for? It sounds like kids are more irritable. What else?
They should be looking for a change. For a kid that changes from summer to winter. You know, they start off the semester well, they're doing well in September, October, November, and then suddenly they begin to struggle and everything becomes too much. And it's very easy to blame it on, oh, the classes are getting more difficult, they're getting more homework, they're more projects. Maybe so, but I think the biggest thing can be that their capacity to process the information is flagging between the summer and the winter.
We have an email from a listener who says that he has had SAD most of his life, which is no surprise since one of my careers is theater, is a theater lighting designer. So he's hypersensitive to light. And he says the best thing he's found this year, he just has done this, is getting a dog. He says, I always try to take a walk in the daylight to get some sun, such as it is this time of year. However, when it's cold out, it's easy to pull the covers up over your head and forget about it. But the dog won't let him do it. And he says she also brings a lot of joy, which is a real upper this time of year. What about pet therapy?
I think this is a wonderful note. And I think just like I was saying earlier, people who think, I cannot possibly get out of bed. Yes, you can. And if a dog is going to help you, then, you know, that's a great way to do it. I'm a great fan of going for walks in the morning, especially in your beautiful snowy Wisconsin, because you're going to get lots of light, you're going to get lots of exercise, you get the company of the dog. And the other thing is it connects you to the seasons, to see what sort of life form is still out there. One time I was walking in the morning and I saw a red-tailed fox. And then you see the crows and you see a splash of cabbage, a red decorative cabbage or color, anything in the landscape, a cardinal on a holly bush, anything that's got any color will stand out very strikingly because of the bleakness of the landscape. So these are some of the joys of winter. And once you can overcome these biological symptoms of the seasonal affective disorder, you can really tune in to some of the pleasures of winter that I believe it was Mary was talking about a little earlier.
Well, you make me think about how in our world today, at least in most of the cities, it's possible to not connect with the outdoors at all if you want to. You can get from your car, the garage to your house and back again, your car to work, and maybe there's a short walk into work and back in your car and into heated places the whole winter if you really want to avoid winter. But you're saying maybe it makes you happier to connect with the season.
Definitely, and with your neighbors. You'll see your neighbor walking his dog, or a group of ladies I see walking around, who are always kind of cheerfully wave and say hi, and it makes you feel like you're part of a community and not just a hibernating bear.
And I suppose the beauty of nature, because there is beauty to be found in winter if you're able to see it.
Absolutely, and you have to have the mind. Your mind has to be in a place where you can enjoy it. So I fully agree.
What are winters like in Washington where you are?
Well, they're surprisingly dark. Hmm. Now, I think that there may be an influence of global warming. And this is a little bit of a diversion. But I have a friend, for example, with whom I wrote the Italian version of Winter Blues. He is in Turin, which is in the northernmost part of Italy. And he's suffered from seasonal affective disorder for years now. And he says that in the last 2 or 3 years, the weather has changed. The north of Italy is milder, and the seasonal affective disorder is correspondingly less. What we had here is a very long autumn, a very long kind of Indian summer. The autumn seemed to last longer. One of my patients who grew up in the Washington area said that she could remember that in September they were already wearing their coats and all the leaves were bare. This year, all the trees were bare of leaves. This year, the trees kept their leaves all the way through till the middle of November. So I think that when the days are still the same length, but you're getting out more. So I think we had a very pleasant autumn, but then when the days get really short and dark, it's as bad as anywhere over here.
We're talking this hour with Norman Rosenthal. He is a clinical professor of psychiatry at Georgetown University, a therapist in private practice, and the author of several books, including Winter Blues. We have open phone lines now, so I hope you'll call and join in our conversation this hour and tell us how you get through winter. Maybe you don't have seasonal affective disorder. Maybe you just get a dose of the blues now again. What helps you chase it away? And if you have a need for advice, and as far as treatment goes, Dr. Norman Rosenthal is here for that as well. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email us at talk@wpr.org. I'm Veronica Rickert in today for Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. At 11:45, Larry Mueller's studio smells like a kitchen. Madison bread making instructor Paul Novak stops by with some freshly baked breads, including Yulakaka. That's bread baking at 11:45 with Larry Mueller. And we're talking this hour with Norman Rosenthal. He's the author of Winter Blues, Everything You Need to Know to Beat Seasonal Affective Disorder. I'm Veronica Rickert, sitting in for Kathleen Dunn. And Norman Rosenthal, we're going to take a phone call now from Vivian in Milwaukee. Hi, Vivian.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
And I am somebody who tends not to like winter. I feel that when it's cold and dark, I don't feel like I'm human. When the weather gets better and the nice temperatures outside, I'm somebody who, then I say, I feel human. I put that as a preface to the fact that a couple of years ago, I had the wonderful privilege of being in South Africa, outside of Cape Town, for a couple of months, and I was, that is the perfect Mediterranean climate that's always in like the 60s or 50s to 70s. And it was getting towards the end of their summer, and the rains were going to be coming, and they were a little bit late, and I noticed that I was getting like a little bit nervous. And I mean, I love it's the perfect weather for me. It was getting down to maybe like into the 40s at night or something, but the daytimes were just fabulous. And I was wondering, it's always like a high pressure, higher than we get around here, it seems. And I'm wondering if that, if your guest would have any thoughts about that.
All right. Thanks for the call, Vivian.
Well, thank you, and thank you for reminding me of Cape Town, which is certainly one of the most beautiful cities in the world, with its mountain and the sea and the beautiful scenery and landscape, ocean drives. It's a spectacular city, and of course, to go there when it's winter here and summer there is marvelous. The summer is not too warm because of the breezes off of the sea, and the days are very long because it's quite far south, and I don't know what the influence of the air pressure is, but there's such a heady mix of the landscape and the casual atmosphere and the small town, because it's quite a small town even though it's also a city, that there are many things about Cape Town that can readily make one feel euphoric in the summertime.
Which makes me wonder, what about, for those of us in Wisconsin, what about taking a trip to somewhere sunny just for a week or two? Would that fix you up for the winter?
You know, I think it goes a long way, but it's not sufficient in itself. I think it provides a wonderful break, but when you come back, you need to be very diligent to get back onto your winter program. Because, you know, oftentimes people come back and they're feeling great and then they neglect their lights or whatever else they were doing to feel good and there can be a crash. So provided one is mindful of that, I think it's a wonderful thing to do, and I routinely recommend it to my folks.
We'll take another call now, this one from Bruce in Eau Claire. Hi, Bruce, you're on the air.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
Days like today, I see the sun shining outside, and I'm affected by seasonal affective disorder, too. And what I like to do is get out ice fishing. You sit out in the middle of the ice, especially when it's got snow on it, and you can just absorb the sunlight. Last Christmas, my family got me an ice fishing shack because, you know, cold weather, it's nice to be in an enclosed area. And it was of typical construction, dark canvas, with very tiny windows. I think the theory is that ice fishermen like to see the light coming up through the water is filtered through the ice so they can see the fish and things like that. But I looked at that and I said, I'm not getting in that. So I took it back and found an ice fishing shack that is actually constructed out of reddish canvas and has big windows, big plastic windows on the side, so I can get out there and open up those windows and see the light reflecting through that, and that works for me.
Is it very boring ice fishing because you've got to sit there waiting for a fish to bite?
Well, if it's boring, then you're not fishing in the right spot.
Okay, well, that's a good answer. Yes, I think one fascinating thing, a couple of fascinating things about Bruce's comments. The first is, you know, that one can be so creative to create different things to do in the winter. And I think it's a great idea. The second is how different people view light and darkness, that the people giving you the gift thought that this was going to be so great because the windows were very small, and on the other hand, to somebody with seasonal affective disorder, the idea of small windows is completely anathema. So it's interesting how differently we're all programmed.
So do you think you'd have the opportunity to try ice fishing out in Georgetown?
Not in Georgetown, but I'd love to try it somewhere else.
Out on the river?
Yes.
All right, we'll take a phone call now from Betty in Madison. Hi, Betty, go ahead.
Hi. I just wanted to comment. I'm someone who suffers from depression all year round and take both Prozac and Cymbalta. And in the fall, of course, my depression worsens, and I start using my light box every morning. And there have been a couple of times where I have found myself becoming too euphoric, almost hypomanic, from using my light box too much, using it to read perhaps, or and have had to have some med adjustments to bring my Prozac down a little bit because my doctor feels that I'm just very sensitive to using the light box and the medication. So it can be a fine line for some people when they start using the light box to find out just what the right amount of light every day is for you, and to just be aware that that sometimes can happen.
Betty, you raised some really important questions and issues. The first is that many people who have depression all year round get worse in the winter. It's not always that people are bad in the winter and fine in the summer. And for these folks, light therapy can be helpful. But the other thing you raise is that too much light can have its side effects like any active treatment. And the one is hypomania, which is an overactivated state. Also, it can cause headaches or eye strain. But the other thing that is interesting is that sometimes if you're very light sensitive, it can result in your needing fewer or less medications, a lower dose of medications. So one thing you might want to talk with your doctor about is whether you might be able to use light all year round and decrease your dosage of medication to its very minimum, thereby saving yourself perhaps some of the side effects that medications so often bring with them.
Thank you for that call, Betty. I'm not sure I understand what hypomania is. Are we talking about an overdependence on the light box?
No, we're talking about a state, you know, normally mania is when people are talking very fast and their mm-hmm. thoughts are going fast and they can do very reckless things like spend a lot of money or make, you know, rash impulsive decisions. Hypomania is a state just under that where, you know, somebody's not likely to make some, you know, terrible judgment error, but they talk too fast, they interrupt you, they don't let you finish your sentences, their thoughts are scattered, everything's moving too quickly. It's like the opposite of depression. What, you know, Benny has described is a kind of an overshoot if you've kind of over-treated the problem, and then you need to pull back on something. So you can pull back on the lights or you can pull back on the medicines. Normally, the medicines cause more side effects than the lights. So it's usually better to pull back on the medicine dosage.
I'm surprised that the light box alone possibly cause hypomania, or is it probably in conjunction with the medication?
They can cause the problem all by themselves.
Hmm. Interesting. Okay, we'll take another call. Here's one from John in Milwaukee. Hi, John, you're on the air.
Hi there. I'm a naturopath in Milwaukee, and I use vitamin D3 quite a bit in the wintertime. Usually in higher amounts, like 2 to 4 international units, but it needs to be vitamin D3 and have great results with it.
So that seems to boost your mood?
Oh, definitely, definitely. And because we don't get the sunlight, and that's what we've been talking about, and the sunlight gets converted into vitamin D in the body. So this way it gets right in there. And there's also another product that I use. It's called Gano Cafe, which is a coffee substitute with Ganoderma, which is a red mushroom. And that is, I find, a natural mood elevator. And just like one cup a day just really changes the outlook for the whole day.
What is it called?
It's called Gano Cafe.
Gano Cafe, G-A-N-O?
Yeah, and it's Ganoderma, which is a mushroom, and it's mixed in with it's an instant coffee. It has very low caffeine in it and tastes like coffee, and it's just a wonderful product.
Yeah.
And you can get it at several stores. The Natural Path in Bayview is one of them.
Okay, great. Thanks for those suggestions, John.
Sure. Well, let me just say, we did try vitamin D. We did a study of vitamin D. We could not find an effect of that. It's quite controversial. However, there are many people who are low in vitamin D, and certainly if anybody has a vitamin D deficiency, and this can be easily established by a blood test, that should definitely be corrected. The effects of vitamin D on seasonal affective disorder have not been established. That doesn't mean that John is wrong, you know, and certainly if he feels better, he knows best what he's feeling. However, you can't really recommend something as a professional, or I feel that I can't recommend something as a professional unless there's really data, and so far the data is lacking. As to Gano Cafe, I've never actually heard of the product, and I'm fascinated, and I'd like to learn more about it.
All right. Well, thank you, John, for that. And we'll take a call now from Kay in Madison. Welcome, Kay.
Hi. Well, I use my light a lot during the winter, and it helps. This year I'm going to Spain for 3 weeks, which I'm looking forward to and hoping that, that the light there will be positive. I do have a question because I use the type of light box that has like fluorescent lights. And recently I bought a light. It's called the Lightbook. And I think it's LED lights. They're bluer. And I don't think it's as helpful. When I sit close to it, it seems like it's almost hard on my eyes. And I'm wondering if he has had any experience with the LED lights. It's a little portable one that's supposed to be good for traveling. And whether the quality of the light is different.
I'm really, really glad that you raised this point because not all light boxes are the same. The ones that have been best tested, both for efficacy and safety, are the ones that use fluorescent lights behind a plastic diffusing screen. These boxes should be about 1 foot by 1.5 feet. That's more or less how big the surface should be. And that's what's been tested in studies, and that's what's been found to be effective. These light boxes or light books or whatever that use these LEDs, they like very bright little buttons. They can either be white or blue. And they have not had the same testing as the larger boxes. I mean, they have an appeal. They're very handy. They're very small. They're portable. They're cheaper. But they have not been as tested as the others. And personally, I also find them hard on the eye. So, you know, I very much agree with what the caller is saying over here, that not all light boxes are the same. Blue light, incidentally, there's very little testing on blue light. And, you know, I would caution people against it.
We have a listener who has emailed us with a question about light boxes. He says he has fashioned his own light box using 420-watt full-spectrum bulbs and that they're marketed for this purpose now by Westinghouse and Verilux. They're made in Germany. And his question is, what is the correct amount of lumens or other light measurement for optimum therapy for seasonal affective disorder? Or is there some rule of thumb using watts and distance that you would recommend?
Well, you see, this is a problem when you make your own boxes. In the beginning, before there were any manufacturers making boxes, I would tell my folks, go get yourself a box, go get yourself the lights, get yourself a screen, get yourself a filter, see that it's properly wired, blah, blah, blah. And what turned out, it turns out to be such a project that these pre-made boxes for the vast majority of people are better. But back to the question, the studies have used 10,000 lux. That's the measurement that's been used. And there is a conversion from lux to lumens, but it's 10,000 lux at a couple of feet away that has been the standard. Of course, there's nothing magical about that number. It could be 9,000 or it could be 12,000 or 7,000, but that's pretty much the ballpark that has been used in the research trials.
So is this pretty much the same for everybody?
Surely not. You know, as with anything, dosage is probably different from one to the other. It's just what the usual dosage has been.
I see. Are there people that you recommend, you know, a mega dose of light for?
Well, yes, there are. In fact, there's some people who have very bad seasonal affective disorder. And for them, I have sometimes suggested the biggest light box that I know is called the Sun Square by Sunbox Company. That's the biggest one. It's large and cumbersome and clunky, and I don't recommend it for everybody. But for some people who've got terrible SAD, I've suggested that they take two of these and angle it down while they sit in a chair, and you feel like you're pretty much surrounded by light.
That sounds pretty nice this time of year.
Well, and it's a pretty intense intervention.
Well, thank you so much, Dr. Norman Rosenthal.
It's been a pleasure.
It has
thank
been a pleasure.
You.
I wish you a happy winter season.
With lots of brightness.
Lots of brightness. Thank you
Take
so
care.
Much.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Norman Rosenthal, the author of Winter Blues. I'm Veronica Rickert, sitting in this hour for Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.